But this is a repeat of Thursday's show.
That's the start, isn't it?
That's the start, boys.
All right. So this week in fishing, I'm Robert from Fish and Franks, and I've got Carl Butigan from KB Backcountry Charters back finally after his fishing expedition of tournaments around the state.
And he won.
Yeah.
Right? Number two? Came in second?
Two, yeah. It's not winning.
Well, you were the first loser, but you still...
Yeah, you were the first loser. First loser up.
Your money.
Yeah, but they gave you a big, giant check. How do you get that into the bank?
That just goes up on the wall.
Oh, okay.
It's like a banner. You just have it up there.
Yeah.
Kind of like a trophy.
Yeah, you can look at it like that.
There you go. That's pretty
cool. Let us keep it, so.
Whatever. Yeah, cool.
So you were fishing a redfish tournament up in St. Augustine?
Yeah, it was the tournament was held out of St. Augustine.
That translates to you run 30 miles either north or south.
I wish it was 30 miles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we ran about 60 miles north to Jacksonville. We had a little bit of a hike.
And that's because they've got the river up there with the marshes and everything else, which is more realistic to fish than the St. Augustine area, because St. Augustine has some pretty good fishing.
They do. I've been going to Jacksonville for probably 5 or 6 years now, so I know Jacksonville pretty good. I went up there and I found some really good fish up in Jacksonville. And then finally, we went south down in St. Augustine. I found a school there, probably 200 to 300 fish, but they were skinny. They didn't have a lot of weight to them. So we decided to make the big long run.
That's a long run every day.
Well, we didn't do it every day. We just did it the 2 days during the tournament. We actually stayed in Jacksonville, so we'd put in there close and run. But we weren't making the full run every day.
Right.
That would have been outrageous.
Right.
Now, you can't keep them up there either, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? You keep them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That's why the tournaments are held in those areas, because you're allowed to keep them. Because we have to bring the fish back alive in our live wells. Then they got to measure them. They got to release them alive, the whole 9 yards. So that's why we don't have tournaments here anymore.
Right.
Yeah. From basically Bradenton down to the Everglades, season's closed, so normal redfish tournaments that would hopscotch all over the state are bypassing those four counties.
Yeah.
You know, because even though it's catch and release, technically you're taking possession of that fish by putting it in your live well and transporting it.
Right, and if it doesn't survive the live well, you got a problem because now you've taken it.
Right, yeah. So it's still a no-waste tournament, so if a fish does happen to perish, you at least have the legal right to keep it, you know. And plus, a lot of these tournaments actually get exemptions from the state game and fish in order to cull fish, because technically, when you're out there fishing, you know, regardless of whatever species it is, even a mangrove snapper, let's say you catch your limit of 5 mangrove snapper, and you still keep fishing, and you start to take a mangrove snapper, the smaller mangrove snapper, out and swap him for a bigger one, you're upgrading, technically you've broken the law, because you've actually already taken possession of those other fish. You know, even though it was alive and swam away well, it's a technicality.
Right.
But
well, that would make sense, too. You know, you spend the whole day fishing to take the 5 biggest fish you can come up with. And you also don't know. It looks like they swam way well, but, you know, they've spent some time in the live well. And
exactly.
They may crap out later on you, so.
So the Game and Fish actually allows these tournaments.
Yeah, we have calling permits.
They have a permit that they allow specific culling where you can swap out fish to upgrade to bigger fish and then also bring it back to the dock in order to weigh it and release it, which is kind of cool, you know, but it's still some logistics involved. And
so did they catch a lot of redfish for the tournament?
Yeah, there was a lot of redfish caught. There was a lot. I mean, a lot of smaller weight fish were caught, but there was a lot of redfish that were caught. I mean, day one, somebody brought back 14 and a half pounds on day one. That's a lot.
That's a big fish, yeah.
Well, they had, that was between two fish.
Okay. So are the fish in this area, because we're not keeping them, are they tending to be bigger? Because I've heard of some real big redfish being taken.
This is our time of year for our big redfish.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to start slowing down after this month. It'll start slowing down big time on those big bull redfish.
Yeah.
Then you'll start seeing more people catching a lot of like the keeper size. But this is, you know, this, it's always been, I've always caught big redfish this time of year. Most of them I'm catching here still are all overs.
Well, you're a little unique to that though. I mean, there's a lot of guys that go out and try to fish for redfish this time of year, and you fish for them extremely differently.
Yeah.
And plus, what Frank coined the phrase for you, redfish whisperer, years ago because of how great you are at a lot of these fish. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you're fishing for all these very specific species, let's say, like, right now trout fishing is real popular normally in the wintertime. Not unusual to go out there and catch 50 to 100 trout on a good day. I mean, it's an exceptional day, but out of all those fish, you're hard-pressed to find a few of those being legal. The guys who really get into the specifics of catching the bigger trout spend the money and spend the time going after just those handful of bigger fish by using completely different bait, because a big trout will still eat a shrimp. But as big trout get bigger, like over 18 inches, they become more predators. They become more fish eaters. So the guys will go out there and try to catch themselves a pinfish, you know, 3 to 4 inches, or throw larger swim baits. Rather than the typical 3-inch paddle tail, they'll throw a 4 or 5-inch paddle tail that you would almost associate with tarpon fishing. You know, that's top how waters. You catch those bigger fish. You know, you're fishing for quality, not quantity at that point. And with Carl going after redfish, rather than just using shrimp or cut bait the way a lot of guys do this time of year, he's willing to go spend the bigger bucks on crabs. He uses blue crabs. That's his primary bait. Am I not correct?
No, that's my favorite bait. I have it. If I could get it, I'd have it on the boat every day.
But that's what gets you those bigger fish consistently. You're willing to spend $2 to $4 on a crab.
Right now I'm spending $30 a dozen.
Okay. So $2.50 a crab. That's pretty expensive for 1 to 2 baits, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. For a fish you're not going to keep.
Yeah.
There's no return on investment other than you get the fight.
Well, you get the fight, but you get to make your customers happy, and you're going to catch them 25 to 35 inch redfish rather than if you're out there throwing shrimp this time of year or small cut bait, you're fishing for the 12 to 20 inch redfish with the occasional, wow, where'd he come from? He was already there the whole time. You just needed to throw what they really wanted as far as a food source goes. That's the biggest part of it. So having that makes a big, big difference on the quality of the fish that you're going to catch.
Yeah, I mean, it does, for sure. I mean, it's a pain in the butt, especially right now. I mean, you know, we can't get crabs.
Right.
It's hard getting crabs around here right now. So, I mean, it's a pain in the butt trying to chase them down the whole nine yards, but...
Because you prefer fresh crabs over frozen.
Yes, I've always preferred live. You know, the meat, for me, it stays better a little bit longer, like the style I'm fishing.
Right.
But the frozen ones, they're going to work too. It's just me, you know, with anything, I like fresh as it can be.
Well, and I'm kind of the same way, but it's like I've always told people you should always take frozen with you for fresh bait insurance. You know, when it comes to whether you're using cut mullet or cut ladyfish for bait and you're going to go out and try to catch them, whether you're cast netting them or hook and lining those for bait, you always still take a couple of frozen ones with you because there's certain days where ladyfish are next to impossible to find, especially when you want them for bait.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Frank taught me that years ago because I like to shark fish. So I would always take mullet and bonita with me as frozen bait, in hopes that I could catch a jack or a ladyfish or some mullet as fresh bait insurance. You know, that was just my fresh bait insurance is all it boils down to. And I understand that, like, blue crabs, yes, there is a difference between frozen and live, no doubt. Just like any other bait, frozen versus fresh is a big difference in bait, but you're willing to spend that money versus a lot of people are not.
Yeah.
Well, and like RJ said, you know, you can't even keep that fish, so it's just strictly for fun.
Right. And there's that's a good issue to bring up is a lot of people don't understand about getting bait in this area. They think, well, the bait shop should have it. Why doesn't the bait shop have shrimp? And how come it doesn't have the big shrimp? And where's all the pinfish? And it has to do with the season, the availability, what the weather is, you know, what's going on in the economy. There's a whole bunch of stuff that affects what kind of bait you're going to get. And you know, what Carl has taught us and Frank has taught us is you need to be flexible. You know, you can't get this way. You're going to have to know how to fish with something else to be able to move along. You know, I hear the guys on the trestle at El Jobin talking about not being able to get fiddler crabs. Right. But there's guys there that all day long they're catching sheephead. You know, they're not having a problem with it. They're using shrimp. So, you know, you find your way around what you can't get. There's going to be an alternative.
Right. Exactly. You know, so, I mean, that holds true with everything. And like you said, some of this stuff is very seasonal where it's next to impossible to get. You know, whitebait. Everyone thinks that whitebait's here all the time. You know, scaled sardine, something you can go out and just cast net anywhere at any given time and go out and catch them. And that's not the case. You know, it's a seasonal thing. It's once that water temperature hits 75 and climbing, they're here. Not always in good numbers, but they're usually here. But once that water temperature gets above 80 degrees, now you know they're here for sure. Mm. And you can go out and catch them. But the other thing is like Frank has even said in the past, is always match the hatch. If you're using smaller, you know, if there's a bunch of small bait around, you use small bait to catch the fish. If it's bigger bait, you know, that's around, then you use bigger baits for them. That's a normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of cool that way.
Oh, you have to match the hatch. I mean, if there's all small bait and you throw something big in there, it's not going to fit in.
Right. Doesn't work at all.
No.
That's a hard part. You know, and something to be said for one of the cool things is, like, a lot of people like to try artificials. And they don't realize with artificials is that you can sometimes treat them like it's bait.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, in this tournament that you just did, and this applies here in our area too, what were you using for bait up there and how were you fishing for those redfish?
Yeah.
If you're willing to give the secret up right now, because it's not really a secret. People just don't think about it.
Long story short, I threw everything in the boat at these fish that I had. Nothing was working. I mean, we catch one here, maybe one there a day. Finally, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to dead stick these fish. So first I threw a gulp out there, a gulp shrimp.
Dead stick means what?
Fishing it as like cut bait, so letting it sit there and just wait. I actually figured out, because I was fishing these fish so much, I actually figured out where they were moving and how they were moving, which way they were coming, on what oyster bed and the whole nine yards. So I tried a gulp shrimp, sat there for an hour, nothing. And I'm digging through the boat. Finally, I found, and I don't know how it got in my boat, I found a pack of fish bites. So I was like, all right, you know, nothing else is working. Let's try this. So it was the long strips that you can cut whatever size you want. Well, I made a sandwich. I called it a Big Mac sandwich. I cut like three or four pieces and put it on a 7-0 circle hook, a tarpon hook, and I put a split shot 6 inches, 7 inches above the hook, and I threw it out there, and I was sitting there for about 15, 20 minutes. Next thing you know, there goes my drag. I looked at my buddy. I was like, there's no way. I was like, that was just a fluke. So we got the fish, and we tried it again. And I'll be a son of a gun. That stuff works.
Yeah. Well, and fish bites is a...
I put ProCure on it, too.
Right. Which helps.
Just for...
It'll never
added,
hurt.
I put ProCure on everything.
Yeah. Scent will... Adding scent to something already scented don't know if it helps or hurts, but I don't
think
it
makes my feelings feel a little better.
Yeah, it's confidence, absolutely. But Fish Bites is kind of a cool product because, A, it's a biodegradable product.
Yes.
It is basically, it's almost like a, it's not putty, but it's a very soft, pliable.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Rubberized kind of product. It's weird.
After it being in the water?
Mm-hmm.
Do not grab it with your hand.
No, it's all slippery and
you
slimy.
You better grab a pair of pliers or scissors and cut it off. And do not put it on your deck.
Because you'll slip right on it.
No.
What?
It'll harden right to your deck.
Really? Nice.
I have a orange mark on my boat, and I have a pink mark on my boat.
Yeah, because it comes in different colors.
Yep. And I said, don't let it sit on your boat.
And they do make a paddle tail version of it and a jerk bait version of it. Yep. But honestly, the strips work absolutely amazing. And the weirdest part is it's hard to get people to understand that chemists come up with some really, really cool ideas for products. So, you know, and the one thing that they do that's, you know, they're scent-enhanced baits, you know, but they've got sand flea, they've got crab, they've got shrimp. I don't know what else. They've got at least...
Clam.
At least...
They got a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, a dozen different flavors.
Sand flea, bloodworm.
And what it is when you open the package up, you can't smell anything. It's all about the enzymes and what they inject into that product. But it's not anything that we can smell or taste because I've tried little nibbles of that stuff just to see what it tastes like. It tastes like nothing.
I didn't go that far, but I did try to smell it.
I did because I was, you know, at a trade show meeting those guys for the first time 20 years ago, and they're like, well, let's, you know, try this. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. You know, I didn't take a chunk, but took a little piece. Tastes like nothing. So it's all enzymes in the package, and you can work it multiple ways. You know, you can dead sticking is one of the most popular ways where you're just throwing it out, pretending it's a dead bait and letting it sit on the bottom and let the smell do its work. And it is amazing. It's hard to get right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very difficult to get in a lot of our areas, even in the entire state of Florida. And the cool part is it's actually a Florida company. They're actually right over there by St. Augustine.
They actually have a bait shop. It's called Fish Bites. It's a neat little place. I mean, it's small, but 90% of their stuff is what they have, isn't there? Is Fish Bites.
Right. But it's an awesome little company. It's made here locally in Florida. You know, but it's some good, good stuff. So if you can ever find it, which we're having a hard time getting it. We've had it on order for a little while and just have not gotten it yet.
They might have a hard time now, too, because we bought all the crab strips that they had.
Well, they're struggling because it's hard to get certain products and chemicals like anything else. You know. Now, enough about some of the redfish that are going on out there. The other thing that changed while you were gone, but you know about now, is the Spanish mackerel that have moved into the area.
I've only seen a couple.
Yeah, but you stayed in the upper end of the harbor.
Yes.
The majority of those Spanish mackerel are stacked down along the passes and out along the beaches and near shore reefs.
Yeah, I'll be out that way tomorrow.
Because the water temperature rose up to, what, 74, 75 degrees this
75
week.
75 was the hottest I marked it yesterday.
Right.
It started at 72.
But even in the Gulf, it's 70, 74, I think they had Gulf reading for Fort Myers Beach on the news this morning.
Yeah.
Which is perfect temperature for those Spanish mackerel as long as there's food around.
There's plenty of food for them.
Yeah, lots of little glass minnows and bait fish all along the beaches. As you go further offshore, there's even bigger schools of some bigger stuff like true Spanish sardines, mm-hmm. some cigar minnows, and some threadfins out from anywhere from 5 to 25 miles off the beaches. But those Spanish mackerel are right in all the passes, Boca Grande Pass, Gasparilla Pass,
that could be a fun time.
Yeah.
Fun, messy, but fun time.
Well, they're fun. They're an awesome fish for a beginner angler. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a child or an adult that's just starting to learn how to fish, it's an awesome fish to start learning how to catch fish. It's also an awesome fish for table fare. You know, I know you're not a big fish eater, just like I'm not a big fish eater. You eat more fish than I do, but it's
not
still
much
not.
More.
But it's one of those fish that tastes very good. A lot of people will question it and say, oh, no, it's only good for smoking. It's only good for that. Anything tastes good smoked if you do it right. I mean, you can smoke a tennis shoe and make it taste okay. But Spanish mackerel, the biggest mistake that people make with Spanish mackerel, and like a lot of their other fish, they don't care for them properly. It's 85 degrees out there right
gotta
now.
You got to ice them down.
You got to ice that fish as quickly as possible. You know,
a lot of people mess up, though, on that.
How do they do that?
They throw it in their cooler or their whatever, and they throw the fish on the bottom, and then they break the ice on top of it.
Right.
You know, the best way is put a layer of ice on the bottom, so then you're chilling down both sides of the fish, just not the one side.
Right.
That'll make a huge difference.
And a slurry makes it even help better, where you add a couple scoops of salt water in with your ice.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it a lot better. And the other thing with doing that slurry mixture is you can, A, cut the throat before you throw the fish in there. Let them bleed out inside the cooler. That's perfectly fine. But throw them in that slushy mix. Not only is he bleeding himself out, but he's basically causing hypothermia.
Yeah.
And hypothermia, what it does is it draws the blood away from any major body parts that aren't essential. So it'll pull that blood out of the meat tissue to put it into the vital organs to stay alive, like the heart, the lungs, the kidneys. It pulls it into all those organs where it needs to survive.
Yep.
And then that fish basically goes to sleep, and then you've got nice, clean fillets.
Mm-hmm.
The other mistake that people make is they take too many Spanish mackerel, because Spanish mackerel doesn't freeze very well. It's one of those fish that you're better off catching enough for dinner that day and the next day, not freezing it, just keeping it nice and chilled. Once you go to freeze that fish and thaw it back out, you change the muscle tissue structure of it so it becomes a much softer, mushier fish.
Yeah.
Not quite as good. So that's the biggest thing that they do with those Spanish mackerel. The other cool part about fishing for them out there is they eat darn near everything. Bottle cap with a hook in it.
Get yourself something shiny and throw it through there with a little steel leader on it.
Yeah, just a plain old silver spoon works just fine.
Yeah.
But I also tell people all the time, if you've got old lures in your box that you never use because you never caught anything with it in the past, you already spent the money on those lures, but you're never using them, use them on the Spanish mackerel.
I prefer single hooks fishing for them.
So do
I. It's a lot safer with them for us-wise.
Well, they throw the hooks all the time because they shake their heads so violently when you pull them out of the water that they'll throw those hooks and land them right into you.
Yep. And you got to be really careful with treble hooks with those fish.
Plus, I seem to actually land more with a single hook than I do with a treble hook.
I agree.
I don't know what it is. I have not quite been able to figure it out why a single hook lure works so much better on landing those fish.
I think it's because it's getting more of the hooks getting in there. With a treble hook, you know, you have those other two hooks that are coming off. It's like a stopper from that hook rotating up so much.
Okay.
That's only theory on it.
Yeah, because it's the same way with ladyfish, too. I land more ladyfish with a single hook than I do a treble hook.
Oh, yeah.
It makes a little bit of sense that that's getting in the way. But I think it has something to do with a lot with how they shake their heads so violently. Both of them, you know, Spanish mackerel and ladyfish, when you get them close to the boat, they're shaking their heads trying to get it out.
You don't want to be on the boat with me when we're catching ladyfish.
Oh, it's a mess. I've been on the
Get them near and just sling them in. If they land in the boat anywhere, it's good. But get the brush afterwards.
Oh, yeah. You got to clean up all that mess afterwards. Same way with the Spanish mackerel.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty cool. But, you know, just a plain old silver spoon is ideal, but any lure pretty much will work on them. So you don't have to spend an exorbitant amount of money to chase after them.
No.
Now, what's your theory on kingfish? Shouldn't they be here right now?
I don't think they'll be far behind.
Yeah.
If the mackerel are coming in this good, I think the kingfish are probably just on the outsides of them.
Yeah. I just haven't heard of any yet. You know, the water temperature is perfect. The bait's around that's perfect. But any day now, I think there's going to be some kingfish out there. So if there's some guys out there that want to go kingfishing, this is the time to go out there and start looking for them.
I go right there, like you said, about 5 to 15 miles out. Look around all that bait. Yeah. Start trolling.
Yeah. And you don't even need to troll around the reefs. You know, a lot of guys like to troll around the reefs. Me personally, for the kings, I actually like to troll the crab traps.
Yeah.
I have better luck trolling the crab traps because I'll also get bycatch like the occasional cobia, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then as you're also running along out there, you'll occasionally see a triple tail while you're going past one of those crab trap buoys. Then you can have even more fun.
Well, you'll see a couple cobia, too. Yeah. I mean, not cobia, barracuda.
Oh, yeah. Barracuda, too, yeah.
Been seeing more and more of them on traps lately.
Yeah, it's pretty weird how they set up on those.
And then there's no triple tail nowhere near that.
Oh, no.
That,
he's dinner for them. But it's kind of cool with what's going on out there right now. You know, the weather's been unbelievably warm. It has been a little windy the last several days because we had that little miniature cold front come through, which really didn't do a lot temperature-wise, but it did a lot for the wind. But over the next long-range forecast, it's supposed to be beautiful for the next several days with some wind, with a lot more wind.
Weather-wise, it's going to be nice, but tomorrow the wind's going to pick up, and Saturday and Sunday it's going to be howling.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to be a very strong wind out of the east.
So, well, and an east wind isn't too bad if you're staying right near shore.
No, you're blocked.
If you're staying within 3 miles, you get that block from the mainland that keeps it really nice and calm. But once you get past 3 miles, it starts to pick up real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got a bigger boat, you can still go out there. But if you got a smaller boat, staying near shore along a lot of those near shore reefs, you got a good chance of getting into some fun stuff. But, you know, they've been getting red grouper out there at 30 to 35 miles with consistency. Some big mangrove snapper, Donnie and his grandson. His grandson caught a 31-inch red grouper.
Nice.
But his grandson's buddy caught an 8-pound mangrove. And they were out there at 32 miles. It was awesome. I mean, to see both those, I mean, they're both teenagers. They're like 13 or 14 years old. And to see them with these smiles from ear to ear with these fish, it was
unbelievable. I'd like to see him bringing them up.
Right?
I bet you they had fun doing that.
The other weird one that happened this past week was a gentleman came in with a video chumming out there at 30 miles out, I think he was. And he actually had vermilions on the surface around his boat.
Wow.
I've never seen that before.
Not vermilions.
I've seen mangroves. I've seen yellowtail. That's normal. But he actually, and the only reason why I know they were vermilions is because he actually hooked one while he's videotaping it, showing, I don't know, there's 50 to 100 in this video that he's panning on the back of his boat. And he puts out his hook and shrimp and pulls one right in. It's like a 12-inch vermilion, a good size vermilion at that.
That's different.
Yeah.
It's really different, actually.
I had just never heard of such a thing.
And they were all vermilions?
Yeah. The way he said they were, you know, but to see him reel in that one that he just casted to, I can't argue it, you know. You got video footage and picture footage. It's hard to really question that. But I've never, ever heard of that.
That's neat, but that's different. So that was the last fish I would have thought you'd have said.
Yeah. Really, really strange. So a lot of really good stuff going on offshore, which makes it pretty enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other thing that's been a little strange, too, is that there's a lot of snook starting to show up on the beaches.
Yes,
you know,
there is.
Not a ton, but actual fishable numbers of snook starting to show up on the beach, which is
way
early. Yeah, it's way early. Not super unusual because of how mild our winter was. Those fish stayed in the ICW pretty much all winter.
They did. A lot of them didn't come up into the harbor like they normally do.
Yeah, they didn't move up into the Peace and the Myakka and even the canal systems the way they normally do.
Mm-mm.
But it's still pretty cool to see those fish out there on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
So if you were to be a land-based fisherman wanting to go fishing on the beaches, trying to go for some of those snook and some of the other cool fish that have been out there, how would you go about targeting them? Because you used to fish from shore when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And still do it once in a blue moon just because you want to keep up to date on things.
What I would probably do is I'd probably either go get a small, what size would that be? Would it be a number 10 X-Rap, I believe? XR10?
The number 10's a big one. You're looking for the smaller one, which would be like a number 8.
The 8, then, yeah. I'd probably go get a number 8 and probably the albino color or the greenback color. And you're going to have to work that really slow because it's got a lip on it, so it's going to want to dive. And the way where you're going to fish these snook, they're going to be right there first couple feet when you walk in where it's, you know, that little deep little trough is. That's where those snook are going to be. So you're going to have to work that really slow. Or I would go get a paddle tail, like a soft plastic paddle tail. Or one of those live target greenback baits, and that's how I'd fish the surf there for them. You know, of course, if you do see bait out there, like bait on the beach, you throw it and you're casting it and catch them, but I'd be doing more walking and casting, you know, right down the beach line. That would be my favorite way to do it.
Okay. So, would you try any natural bait or anything like that on them?
Yeah, like the, if like I said, the, if you have greenbacks in the area and you have a little cast net, I mean, you could get that. I wouldn't even be bad idea trying, you know, like a select or a hand-picked shrimp.
See, that's more my style.
Free line in it, though.
Free line or a little teeny tiny tiny split shot, mm-hmm. like a number four, even down to like a BB, just to give it a little bit of weight.
But see, like, I've actually gone really fond of those. Are they Savage shrimp?
Mm-hmm. The ones that are segmented
with the hook already in them?
Yeah.
I've actually gone pretty fond of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd actually throw those a lot for redfish. I probably wouldn't, you know, hurt to grab one of them and throw that down the beach either.
No. Yeah. I mean, artificial-wise, that Savage or the Voodoo are probably two really good ones. As much as I like the DOA shrimp, that's a little, I don't know, with that segmented tail, it gives a little bit more action. The thing I like about shrimp, though, is that they're just easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can catch a lot of different stuff on it, but probably if I had one lure to take out there to the beach with me, which seems to catch everything, is a banana jig or a crazy jig that they use for pompano fishing.
See, you take that for a snook?
Yeah.
I know they work. I just haven't really targeted snook with them because they work great for trout and all types of stuff.
Right. I've just seen everything caught on them, so it would be something that I would be trying.
I've seen 150-pound tarpon hooked on one.
Right. Plus, I can catch shrimp or use a shrimp on it, too, and just tip it with it and just slowly walk it along the bottom without even having to really bounce it. Because being on the beach, you've got no structure or anything. You just got sand and a couple of little shells and stuff that you got to worry about. So hopping them around that isn't that difficult. But that would be my one choice, I guess, if I had one lure to pick to go out to the beach with in general fishing.
Yeah.
Because of the variety of other things. Pompano, sheep's head.
Whiting.
If the Spanish mackerel come running in close to shore, you can cast that out there and get to them. Yeah, so it's kind of nice.
Occasional redfish come down the beach.
Right. It's nice to have.
It's a good versatile.
Yeah. It's kind of a one lure does most.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
So what else have you been hearing about, like along the intercoastal around the trestle? You've been hearing much about the sheep's head with as warm as the water has gotten?
I haven't been hearing anything, but I'm seeing the boats and the people fishing there every day.
Right.
I'm not sure if they're catching them still or what, but there's a lot of boats for nobody catching anything.
Right.
I mean, I think the other day I came through the trestle on Boca, and I think I counted like 25 boats.
Wow. That's a lot.
So I don't know if that's a sign that, hey, they are biting pretty good. It's going to start slowing down.
Yeah, as that water warms up.
Yep, the water's warming up, and the sheephead bite's going to start really slowing down big time. You know, they're going to start pushing out.
Yeah, well, I've already heard of a lot of guys doing well on the nearshore reefs like Helens and Trumbly and Novak and Mary's Reef, which are all no more than 6 miles out.
I am still seeing a lot of big ones in the shallow water, though.
Up on the backcountry?
Yes.
Around some of the oyster bars and some of the mangrove cuts?
A lot of big ones.
Okay.
So I am still seeing a lot of them. I haven't really been looking at the docks lately. I haven't been fishing them, but I'm still seeing a lot of big sheep's head around the oyster beds in the shallow water.
Yeah, the last spot I heard from good sheep's head was several days ago, but it's been up there at the jetties up in Venice. Several of the guys have been doing very well there, and the numbers have decreased a little bit, but the quality has gone up a little bit.
So maybe a lot of the smaller ones are pushing out already, and the bigger ones are working our way.
Yeah, it's possible, but, you know, like I said, that was the last positive report from a land-based fisherman that I got, because Eljo Bean never really kicked off this year. Anger Pier, even the Tom Adams Bridge, never really kicked off great this year. It did good, but not great. Placida Trestle did really pretty good, but not phenomenal. You know, it had its hit or miss days like everything else.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, at least there are some around that I've been hearing about, just not gangbusters.
I bet you could still go to the nearshore reefs and still do pretty good.
Yep. And you just fish them with fiddler crabs or small crabs or shrimp if you don't want to mess with crabs if you can't get them. Because, I mean, we just finally got in fiddler crabs, but it's been like a month and a half since we've had them.
But see, that's somewhere where I'd actually much prefer to use a fiddler crab on those near shore reefs.
Why is that?
Just because of all your other, I mean, I wouldn't say like bycatch, but all your other snappers, porgies, grunts.
Bycatch.
Oh, yeah.
But it's pleasant, wonderful bycatch. It's not like
yeah, it's you not caught a bad catfish
and said, well, that's crappy bycatch.
But you're going to have more chances of getting a sheep's head out there with a fiddler crab or a little mud crab or something like that versus dropping a shrimp where everything out there eats a shrimp.
Right.
So you're going to actually catch a heck of a lot more of the other fish that you're not trying to catch and then finally get, you know, one that you want.
Right.
So well, I figured... About the fiddler crabs being a little bit better out there than up in, like, the docks and stuff.
Right, and I think that the benefit you have of using a fiddler crab out there besides the shrimp is that if a mangrove's going to eat that fiddler crab, because grunts, mangroves, all them eat fiddler mm-hmm. crabs and small crabs, usually they're better quality fish.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of people catch all those little tiny snappers on these nearshore reefs, but usually if one's going to mess with one of those crabs, he's usually 12 inches plus. He's usually a good-sized mangrove.
It's one worth catching. Yeah,
exactly. So what else has been going on in and around the harbor that you've been hearing about? Because, I mean, with this weather changing the way it is, it's been pretty impressive. I just don't know how long some of this stuff's going to last because I think we're still in for at least one more good cold snap that's going to shut things down for a little tiny bit.
I know the cobia fishing slowed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This warmer weather should push them to our nearshore reefs and just offshore. There's tarpon running around.
Really? Like in the pass?
There's scattered fish everywhere in the pass, Pine Island Sound, harbor. There's just, they're moving around a lot.
Hodgepodge.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's semi-targetable?
No yesterday we got six.
Yeah. And how long did you work at it for?
I think it was like 6 hours.
So basically
it was pretty nautical though.
Average tarpon fishing for May and June is what you did yesterday.
Yeah, I mean that's about
what you would average during peak tarpon season.
We had a delay going to look for them yesterday. It was pretty nautical in the morning.
Yeah, a little breezy.
Yeah, it was pretty sporty.
2 to 3 foot white caps out there.
Yeah, it was like three and a halfs.
Nice.
So we went some sheltered areas and looked, and I kind of had a feeling, you know, where they probably would be hanging around. And I told the guys, I said, we'll idle that way nice and slow and see if it lays down. And it gradually laid down. Then later in the day, it finally really laid down. And once it laid down, it was on.
Nice.
They ate pretty good.
Were you seeing rolling fish or were you finding them on your side scan?
I seen one rolling fish all day yesterday.
Okay.
Water temp's still too cold. They're staying down. A lot of oxygen in the water.
Yeah. Which is what a lot of people don't understand because they're so used to tarpon rolling and coming up and being able to sight fish them that way. And when the water temperature is the way it is, there's so much oxygen in the water, they don't have to come up and gulp very often.
Nope. They're staying down. Like I said, I seen one the whole day yesterday. That was it. And I was lucky. I seen him. Maybe he was a good ways away when I seen it.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, that's pretty cool. Now, what would you be using on them? Since I know thread fins aren't really here and the little crabs aren't around.
I mean, it wouldn't hurt to have a ladyfish. Yesterday, we were throwing all artificial. We were throwing bait busters, DOA bait busters at them.
Okay.
But I know ladyfish will work. Spool tech, that's another good lure to throw. They're a little pricier, but, I mean, they do work. Big paddle tail, like them Strike King ones.
Okay.
Or one of those Storm paddle tails, the three packs.
Right, the Wild Eyes.
Wild Eyes. Yeah. You know, stuff like that is what I'd be throwing.
What about, like, the Voodoo Mullet and that 5-inch and 6-inch?
I don't see why I wouldn't. I've never tried it, but I mean, having live mullet work great. It's a pain in the butt to get. Yeah, that's why a lot of us don't go get them.
Hard to find them.
But and mullets do work good, so I don't see why that artificial mullet wouldn't work at all.
Right. No, you can see that. So they're, and these are all good sized fish. They're not your typical like juvenile. No, I mean,
the smallest one we got yesterday was probably 130, 140.
Wow.
The biggest one we got was probably 200, 210.
Nice.
There are some big fish coming around. The ones we were fishing on yesterday were all silver, so they just came in.
Right.
You could kind of tell, like, if the fish is darker, they've been here, they're more of our residential fish. Fish is real silver and whitish. They just came in from the Gulf.
Right.
Yeah, well, these are...
But they could be resident fish that just stayed in the passes the whole time.
That's a possibility. Because
there's always a few of those fish, too.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
Because what I'm hearing about in Flamingo and the Keys, they still got a fair number of those fish down in there. So I think there's a combination of both, without a doubt, showing up, you know, some long-range travelers and some resident fish mixed in out there.
Oh, yeah. That's very possible, because they're all going to meet up at some point.
Yeah, yeah. It's just some get to the party a little earlier
than
others.
Isn't it amazing how the residential ones know when
the
migrating ones come?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's pretty fascinating.
It's like, how do they know that?
Yeah, so... If you were going to go out fishing over the next couple of days, which I know you've got several charters, what kind of advice would you give somebody that is, say, fishing in the flats that wants to go out and try to catch some fish over the next couple of days?
Well, with the winds we're going to have, I'd either say go to the east side of the harbor. That's going to be your sheltered side, or in Boca Grande, because you have, like, the whole Turtle Bay, Bull Bay kind of sheltering. That west side, any west banks right now are going to be pretty choppy these next few days. I go out, get some ladyfish, frozen or live ladyfish. If you're looking for cobia, I get on the outside of the east wall bar. Throw out a couple of pieces of cut bait. You might catch a couple sharks, because I have been seeing some black tips and little spinner sharks free jumping everywhere, which is always pretty cool to see. Still some bonnethead sharks on their bars right now. There's a lot of activity on, you know, on the sandbars.
Right.
And you're going to be sheltered. You're not going to take such a beating, you know, driving across the harbor.
Only to get from one spot to the next.
Yes.
If you happen to be putting in, like, say, up in the Mayak, got to run over to the east wall. Yeah, you're going to
get
beat up
a little bumpy ride. But once you're there, it's going to be nice. The way home might be a little bumpy again.
Right.
But being sheltered, that's the biggest thing. I mean, nobody wants to sit there and fish in rough water all day, wind pounding on you. It's just, you're going to catch fish, but it's not going to be very pleasurable. You know, look for those more sheltered areas.
Gotcha. See, if I had my option, I'd be probably wanting to stick around on that same side, you know, on that eastern edge, trying to get out of the wind. Or fishing up along the intercoastal, kind of between Placida and Lemon Bay.
That'd be a good spot.
Because there's some good calm areas in there, too.
Yep.
And I like the grass flats a little bit healthier down in that area. I don't know it well enough, so it's a little bit of a struggle for me personally. But it is a lot more aesthetically pleasing because of the grasses and all the other wildlife that's
down there. But
even
if you don't have a shallow drafting boat, there's plenty of docks over there in that intercoastal to fish for sheep's head snapper, black drum. So even with a bigger boat, you're still okay over there.
Right. No, that's pretty cool. Now, have you heard anything about any night fishing lately because of how warm it's gotten? Have you heard anything?
Heard Elgin Beam Bridge has been pretty good for the snook lately at nighttime.
Yeah.
Heard they're catching some really good snook there. I heard 75 and 41 Bridge have both had, you know, good snook on them.
Yeah, which are much easier to catch at night than they are during the daytime.
Yes, they are. Especially once the traffic slows down on the bridges.
Yeah.
All the vibrations aren't going down the bridge, and those fish really start feeding then pretty good.
Yeah, after, like, what, 9 o'clock at night, it seems to get a lot better.
It depends if it's a weekend or a weekday.
Well, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, I wouldn't put it past, you know, which tarpon's showing up if we don't have tarpon starting to show up at the bridges either.
Right.
But the snook are there, so...
Yeah, I got guys that have been catching the snook, and they're just slow rolling a bait right along the bottom,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a paddle tail or a grub, but it's all been soft plastics mostly, along with some of the bucktails. You know, they're just, but they're working them very, very slowly, almost dragging them right along the bottom. That seems to be the most productive way for some of the guys that have been successful at catching some of those bigger snook in that 35-plus inch range.
Yeah, I know somebody that's been fishing Eldra Bean. They're like, if we could throw it in, he won't tell me the section that he's in on there, but he's like, if we could not get hung up when we're going through there, we'll catch a big snook.
Right.
But it's like every other cast you're hanging up.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's a very, very rocky bottom. And he goes, you just got to try to bounce it right off the top of those rocks. And right. He goes, you'll catch a big one, but getting hung up is very easy.
Well, there's a lot of extra debris down there from when they built the new bridge there.
Oh, know, yeah.
20 years ago. I mean, it's not that new of a bridge, but when they started building there, that definitely added more debris down there.
Oh,
to the already older debris field that's been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it was amazed how much, because I side scanned it the other day, and I was amazed how much debris was actually down there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of debris.
It's crazy. It is crazy. And that side scan has really changed fishing in general.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's amazing that you can actually kind of get a better idea on what's going on down below you.
Well, you kind of have a dolphin's view.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to put it.
We kind of stole the technology, you know, their sonar, you know, because they send out pins and it just comes back to them. Dolphins know exactly where the fish are.
Right.
Well, that's what the units are doing nowadays with the side scan and stuff.
That's pretty cool. I never thought about it that way, but that's a pretty good description on, you know, it's a dolphin's point of view.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Because I sit there and watch them on the side of my boat and they know exactly where that school of redfish is when I'm fishing them.
Right.
And they'll sit right on the outside. So I know them. Those redfish aren't going deep because the dolphin's there. So they're staying shallow. And then the dolphins get pissed off about 45 minutes into it, and they ruin the party.
Yeah. No, it's crazy how Flipper has gotten in the last few years everywhere.
Them and the birds.
Yeah. You know, the other thing.
Very, very bad.
The other thing that's really cool that's going on out there is the schools of cow nose rays that are starting to show up all over the place.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
I had a guy yesterday jump. He's like, what the heck is that? And I was like, oh, those are rays.
Yeah.
He's like, I ain't never seen that before. The whole water just turned brown when they came by. And he's like, what are those things? He was freaking out.
Christina actually hooked one on the mouth the other night.
Oh. Like, took her for a run, didn't it?
Yeah. She did a great job. She landed it, but it was pretty awesome.
You know? Things are strong.
Yeah, they are. They're deceivingly strong for what they are. And they're just, you know, you very rarely catch them on hook and line. Usually you accidentally snag them.
Yep.
So it gets to be a little bit of a headache, but they're still a fun, fun fish to catch.
There's some of the biggest jacks I've seen.
Really?
In the harbor right now that I've seen in probably 5 years.
Really?
There's some 15, 20-pound jacks running around right now.
Out in the holes or?
Just
sporadically just, everywhere.
There's so much bait in the middle of the harbor, like glass minnows and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They're just roaming the harbor.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, they came by the boat the other day, and they were big. I haven't seen jacks that big in a long time.
Well, it's probably been 4 or 5 years since I caught. Well, it's probably actually been closer to about 6 years or 7 years now when we caught those big jacks with my cousin and her kids. Yeah, and those were big jacks. Those were like 15-pounders.
There's some big ones running around right now.
That's awesome. See, now that's one of the most underrated fish that we have here. You know, pound for pound, it's an awesome fighting fish. And if they could teach that fish how to jump, I think it would be our greatest sport fish ever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they're like kind of like a Spanish mackerel. If you get a lure that wiggles in front of them, they'll eat it.
Yep.
Almost every time.
There's some big ones. I haven't seen big ones like that in a long time.
That's pretty cool.
That's
super cool.
It was a crazy show the other day when all three of my guys, hey, look at them. They all three throw in. Oh, yeah, it was
Chinese fire drill.
Oh, Lord. It was lines going this way. Bud, you got to go to the back of the boat. You got to come this way. You got to go over him. Oh.
That's the fun part about your charter business. That's why you run three different colored lines on your reels, because that way you can help with those tangles and tell people which way to go.
It was a mess.
That's awesome. So I know we're getting ready to finish this up, and you know I wanted to catch up on what's going on at the shop. You know, the shop has been picking up a little bit, obviously, with the customers. It's peak snowbird season coming up on spring break this whole month, so we're going to see a lot of new bodies and faces, but it's amazing how many new people in general have moved down here and coming into the shop. I mean, how many did you deal with this morning alone that are newbies that live here now?
A lot.
I mean, say probably eight or ten people that were brand new to here.
I'd probably say about 15.
There you go. You know, so they're coming in and learning, checking things out. We're starting to get in product. I mean, every week we're getting in more and more product. Reels are still very difficult to get. Hooks are still difficult to get. Some of the rods and stuff like that. But, I mean, overall, we're filling in more and more each week. Mm-hmm. You just still have to go to plan B, C, D, and E because A isn't working out half the time. But there is product in there.
Yeah.
We just got in fiddler crabs this week. The shrimp have been doing pretty good. You know, lots of things going on down there at the shop that's making it really pretty cool. Oh, yeah. And Frank's been busting his butt, still trying to call every vendor and get product in there. So it's worth taking a ride down there and checking out the new place. And
oh, for sure.
If you need some help with the fishing or knots or anything like that, stop in and we'll try to help you out. And, of course, you know, we got Carl, KB, Backcountry Charters. Now, you do pretty much inshore charters inside the harbor for the most part, but you also go with people on their boat to take them out to educate them. This time of year, you're doing more on your boat because it's just so blooming busy.
Yes.
It's hard to take people out and give them some good dedicated time, but how can they get a hold of you?
941-565-7325.
And you can, and they can text you or text call
me,
you, right?
Call me. Yeah. You can also look me up on my website, kbbackcountrycharterfishing.com.
It's pretty easy. Or they can come into the shop and meet you
on Thursdays.
On Thursdays and Mondays. Yep. You're usually in there Monday afternoons and Thursdays usually all day.
All day.
So they've got multiple options. And then, of course, we do our talk at Luigi's there in Port Charlotte, third Thursday of every month. And do just talks about fishing or products or all sorts of other good stuff, which is pretty awesome. You know, so there is a lot of stuff available out there. You just got to put a little bit of effort in there into it. If you're a new angler to the area, just go out there and start looking around. Give the shop a call. We'll help you out with whatever. And that's our music to say that we're done. So thank you very much for listening to us here on WKDW in Northport. Thanks for all your time and appreciate it.
Hook, sinker, and line. I said,